listening to the Bible teachings of Reality Stockton. For more info, please visit our website at realitystockton.com.
The Book of Ruth, Chapter 3. Ruth and Boaz at the threshing floor. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may not be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing in the barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known until the man has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the edge of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth. I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter, that you made this last kindness greater than the first, and that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true, I am a redeemer. Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lay down until the morning." So she laid at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, "Bring the garment that you are wearing and hold it out." So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how this matter turns out. For the Lord will not, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today."
The greatest stories that we have ever heard or read, or maybe even personally been a part of, were more than likely stories that were marked by tension. A story of tension. That was a good ringtone. Like a tense moment right now. Tension is what makes a story interesting. And that's the kind of stuff that makes a Sunday morning interesting, ironically. Tension is probably the greatest literary device an author has. The twist. That moment or that problem or that thing that presents itself in the story. The suspense that keeps us on the edge of our seat. Think about your favorite book. Think about your favorite movie. It's when things get stirred up and the stakes are high, and then the solution seems impossible or absolutely out of reach. That is the moment that tension enters into the story, and that's actually really when things get interesting. Now, here's the thing about tension. We love it and we hate it. Oscar Wilde once said this, the suspense is terrible. I hope it will last. In other words, the suspense is killing me, but I love it. And so the question is why? Why do we love suspense? Why do we love tension like that so much? And I believe it's because we know that it's leading to something important. we know that it's moving the story towards something good. We know that the tension isn't meaningless. Now, often when the work of God begins to advance, obstacles will appear. As God is building something, as God is revealing his glory, as God is revealing his plans, more times than not, an obstacle or obstacles will appear. And the interesting thing is that we look for this in stories, but we attempt to avoid them in our own lives. We're disappointed when we see a movie or we read a story that where the plot has no suspense, a boring story. We are bored by boring stories, and yet that is the very story we desire for our own lives. We're quite content with the boring story. We're quite content with a lack of risk. We are frantic at the first sign of disappointment and an obstacle in our life. But you see, living faithfully before the presence of our God, living in faithfulness, we need to remember this, that we should never initially assume that obstacles are a sign that things are coming to an end, but rather that it's a pretty good sign that good things are just appearing. The good things are just coming about. And this is the very place that the author of Ruth is bringing us to here in chapter 3. Suspense is entering into the storyline, and there are a few dilemmas, namely the future of Naomi. What's going to happen to Naomi? What does her future hold? Will she find protection? Will she find care? Will she find a home, or will she be left up to herself to fend for herself? The same question is there for Ruth. Or how about this dilemma? Will Boaz marry Ruth? This little midnight rendezvous, this is a last-ditch effort. You don't sort of return and sneak out of the room if this thing goes bad. If this thing goes bad, it all goes bad. And there's even that cliffhanger at the end of the chapter. I don't know if you caught it. Boaz says, by the way, I'd love to marry you, but there's a problem. There's an obstacle that you hadn't foreseen. Someone else has a claim to the role before me. Even though I want to marry you, there's a potential that I can't. But there's another thing about tension. It not only pushes the story forward and leads to interesting things, tension actually itself makes things happen. Tension is always producing something. Pressure in our life has the ability to either crush, or like the age-old illustration of a coal and a diamond, that same pressure has the ability to refine and bring about beauty. As Malcolm Gladwell put it, a lot of what is most beautiful about the world arises out of struggle. Pressure has the ability to either crush or to refine. And so when we face pressure or uncertainty or potential risk, we need to ask ourselves the question, what is the tension? What is this dilemma? What is this obstacle? What is this pressure producing in me? What is it producing in this moment? And that's the very question that's hanging over the characters in this chapter. What is the pressure producing? What we're going to look at this morning are three points as we walk through this passage: Naomi's restlessness, Ruth's refuge, and Boaz's resolve. Let's look first at Naomi's restlessness. Look with me in verse 1 again. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest," note that word, "for you, that it may be well with you?" Should I not seek rest for you, so that it may be well with you? Now, what we see in the life of Naomi thus far is a genuine concern for the well-being of her daughter-in-law, Ruth. There's no reason for us to think that there's any sort of ulterior motives here. She's genuinely concerned for Ruth. But within it, we begin to see a word that has now popped up multiple times. When the author of Ruth does that, it draws our attention to see the patterns. We saw this in chapter 1, the repeated word, return, return, return. It's the author saying, pay attention to this word. And now in chapter 3, we're seeing another repetitive word, and it's this, rest. rest. We already know that Naomi is concerned about this thing called rest. If you remember from our time in chapter 1, we read this. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find," what? "Rest, each of you in the house of her husband. May the Lord grant that each of you find rest." And now she's asking, "Should I not seek rest for you?" But notice that there's a change occurring. In chapter 1, Naomi is saying, "May the Lord grant you that you may find rest." But what's going on here in chapter 3? Naomi is saying, "Should I not seek rest for you?" There's a transition. May the Lord grant you rest. Now it's, "Should I not seek rest for you?" See, too often in our lives, reliant prayer shifts and gives way to restless plotting. It's no longer, "How is our God going to overcome this?" It's now, "How can I fix this?" It's no longer a declaration that God will grant you rest. It is now a declaration of, "What do we need to do to get it done?" See, when God refuses to get on our timetables, I don't know if they told you, he refuses to get on our timetables. And when he refuses to fit into our nice, neat, packaged agenda for our lives, what often happens is we grow restless and we grow anxious. And so because of our sinful bent and our autonomous, independent bent, we will often take matters into our own hands. Restlessness and anxiety is often an indicator that we are attempting to play God in our own lives. We willing to receive that this morning? That restlessness and that anxiety and that pit in your stomach may be an indicator that you're trying to play God in your own life and the lives of others around you. It seems to be occurring. See, what started as a good idea, "You should consider marrying Boaz," totally good idea, has escalated very, very quickly. Look with me in verse 3. "Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor, but don't make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." Okay, so let's translate that into common day language. All right, shower and shave, put on perfume, put on something nice, wait until he's turned up, and make your move. Am I missing this? Like, wait until he's married, in other words, wait until he's tossed a few back, and then make your move. Let's just say she's not telling her to go in her sweats and depend on her inner beauty, okay? You can make your own connections there. Every man knows what walking into the room in sweats means, but we'll move on from there. Now, the scripture don't add commentary on this. So there's no narrator stepping into the story and saying, "Pause, okay, gather around, children. Let's make some moral assessments here." We don't have that going on. It's just the story carrying on. But as the reader, that's us, we ought to see that even if the aim is right, restlessness can lead to compromise. We need to be watchful for the sort of the end justifies the means sort of mentality. Okay? Well, we're moving in the right direction, but we're going to be married eventually, so... All right. Fill in the blank, but whatever. The truth is that God will, as he's carrying us along in the journey towards the end, he will always present the most righteous path. He will always present the most righteous path. And so our daily responsibility and every decision making is always asking God for the wisdom to discern what is the most righteous path in this very moment. In this very moment. Now, there's another interesting thing going on here. it mentions this word rest, and rest is a very loaded word. It means security. It means to be settled, and it even means to, like this. It's got this connotation of being able to breathe. This sort of rest, like that sort of release, like just finally being able to breathe. And there's this unsettledness that is over the entire story. There's this inability to breathe until Ruth finds love and finds a home. In fact, the NIV translates Naomi's words like this: I must find a home for you where you will be provided for. I need to find you a home, somewhere safe, somewhere secure, so you will be provided for. Now, there is a spiritual connection for us here. St. Augustine, in his famous compilation of prayers called Confessions, he prayed this prayer and question to God. He said this: what do the lonely and anxious long for except for a love that they cannot lose? In other words, what's below our restlessness? Is it not a need for meaningful, lasting love and security? He goes on to say this: but who can give a love that doesn't fade and die? Let's pause there. Both Naomi and Ruth are bitterly aware that love on earth can die. But who can give a love that does not fade or die but you? What does weariness seek except rest? But what sure rest is there apart from you? And so he goes on to pray the famous prayer: you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find the rest in you. Not in our relationships, not in our circumstances, not in our accomplishments. And even for us today on a Sunday morning at church, not even rest in our own religious ability, but in you, in God. I thought to myself, I asked the question of myself, the question that you're probably thinking right now: why does he love this quote so much? You've probably quoted it 3 times in the last year. And I realize it's because I have so much restlessness in my own heart. This is a reminder that I need today. In my life, I'm a man of responsibilities. I have responsibilities in my life. I've got concerns about my life. I've got concerns about my family and my future and our church and its members and your lives and your relationships and your worries. There's concerns. There's always an opportunity for stress. Doesn't matter what's on your plate. And I find that in my life, there are many areas where prayer becomes desperate plotting. That is my bent. Okay? Pray for a second, plot for 10 minutes. And I find that in those moments, as I give in to the temptation to abandon prayer and move towards plotting, that faith gives way to fear. And when faith gives way to fear, the whole gamut of problems comes. The next time we experience restlessness and unsettledness, and I'm venturing to believe I'm not alone in this, we'd be wise to ask the question, where is this coming from? What's going on below? Restlessness and anxiety is like that pesky little check engine light on your car, okay? When that check engine light comes on in your car, the problem isn't the light, okay? Now, there are ways, I know, okay, so like if you got the light on, you got to smog it the next day, little trick, you disconnect the terminals on the battery and the light goes away. But guess what? The check engine light comes back. The check engine light is never the problem. Now, we can blame the check engine light. We can try to remove the light on the check engine light, but it's not going to solve the problem. The problem is under the hood. And in our lives, our restlessness and our anxiety, it's a problem, but it's a fruit, not a root. It's pointing to something deeper. And we'd be wise to ask the question of our restlessness: what is going on below the surface? What is going on under the hood? And we'd also be wise to respond, because this is not just about diagnostic in our lives. It's about responding in faith. And God has given us an opportunity, a means to respond to this restlessness. I want to share this psalm. The psalmist says this. Think about what the psalmist is doing and who the psalmist is talking to in Psalm 116. Return, O my soul. Who's he talking to? His own heart. Return, O my soul, to your rest, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. This is the psalmist saying, soul, go home. Like, you're acting like you're an orphan when you have a home. You're acting like you're lost when you have a place to call home. The Lord has dealt bountifully with you. Go back home to abiding relationship with God through Christ, and only then will you find the rest that you are looking for. Hear that today. And only then will you find the rest that you are looking for. We see Naomi's restlessness. Secondly, we see, you guys still with me? Secondly, we see Ruth's refuge. Look at me in verses 5 and 6. And she replied, all that you say, I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. Now, I know what you ladies with mother-in-laws are thinking right now. Commanded? Yeah, right. Now, the truth is, Ruth is probably very, very young. Both Naomi and Ruth are widows at this point. Ruth, though it seems like she's the one bringing home the bacon lately, is still under the care of Naomi. Now, this is an object lesson for us, because when we are acting out of restlessness, it's not just us that is affected by that sort of pattern in our lives. We're not the only ones that are affected when we are responding in restlessness. We begin to make irrational and potentially harmful demands on the people around us. See, when I'm not finding my home in God, when my heart's not finding its home in God, it's going to find it in another place. And when I start to find it in another place, it's most likely going to be another person. And so I put God-like expectations on people that aren't God. And because of that, I will make irrational demands for their lives. Because guess what? I'm expecting them to be God. And because I'm expecting them to be God with all the wherewithal of God, I'll put them in harmful situations. Restlessness impedes our ability to love others as we ought. You see, Ruth goes. Ruth responds. She obeys the commands of Naomi, her mother-in-law, and she goes at great risk to herself. There's a lot of risk involved in this chapter. There's some questions like, what if she's caught before she gets there? We already know from chapter 1 and 2, this is a place where Ruth needs to be protected from particular men in the city, from them laying their hands on her. And that's during the day, not when she's by herself at night, vulnerable, where no one can hear her, and she's looking and smelling great. She's stepping into a very, very risky situation. Or how about this? What if she has misidentified Boaz? It's dark. What if she you remember those times when you were in a public place with your parent or your guardian as a little kid, maybe like a grocery store, and you stray off and you come back and you go to wrap your arm around their leg and grab them by the hand and you look up to see that it's not your parent? You remember that mortifying feeling? Like you just wanted to crawl somewhere and die. This would be 100 times worse. Think about it. If she misidentified Boaz, what if she cuddles up to an individual that doesn't have the integrity that Boaz has? What if she's cuddled up with someone that isn't concerned about her reputation and purity at this moment? What would be the result? We don't know. Or how about this big one? What if Boaz says, nah? Like, what? She's going for broke right now. And what if Boaz says, no? Think about how high risk this is. If Boaz says no, this isn't just a matter of like an awkward Monday morning conversation. Hey, Boaz, remember Saturday night? About that. Sorry, I don't know what got into me. Awkward. If this goes bad, Ruth is done for. Like, if this goes bad, Ruth and Naomi's future is compromised. This is their provider, and that has now potentially been broken. But she risks it all. She goes. And the question is, why? Why? What compelled Ruth to risk it all? What compelled her to go to the threshing floor? Was it confidence in her beauty? Did she look in the mirror that night and said, I'm going to slay him? This is all over. Boaz has no chance. Or did she step back and look at Naomi's plan and say, this is a foolproof plan. This is going to work. Or was it something else? I think the answer is found within verse 9. This is why Ruth risks it all. For you are my redeemer. Why did Ruth risk that night? Because of confidence in who her redeemer is. This isn't carelessness, but it's also not self-confidence. In the life of Ruth right now, we are seeing the right kind of risk. The kind of risk that simultaneously is aware of the vulnerabilities of the world and yet finds the safety and security of refuge in the Redeemer. And in this tension, Naomi is restless and it's producing compromise. But the interesting thing is, in the same tense moment, same environment, same circumstance, that same tension, Ruth is seeking refuge and it is producing beauty. And one life producing compromise and another producing beauty. And we begin to see her character to shine. Her character is shining through in this chapter. See, in a situation where Naomi was counting on her exterior beauty, God had something else in mind. The work of trust and faith that God was bringing about in the life and the heart of Ruth, that is what begins to emerge in this situation. And we read that that was truly what was pleasing to Boaz. That was the reputation that he had heard of. Not that Ruth is, put it lightly, easy. Not that Ruth is somehow stunning. He says, the word that's come to me is that you're a worthy woman. It's the same word that the Proverbs 31 describes as the excellent woman. See what's going on? Naomi counting on her exterior beauty, but God is doing another work. And that inner beauty is beginning to emerge through this story. And so the story tells us that he awakes to Ruth. Think about this. He's sleeping. Again, no narrator making moral statements here. He's had a few drinks. And he awakes to Ruth and he asks her the question, who are you? And she says, I am Ruth. And it's interesting, in the same verse she responds, she wastes no time. She says this, spread your wings over your servant. I'm Ruth, you're my redeemer. Spread your wings over your servant. Now, this may sound strange, it may sound archaic, or it may even sound sort of like a sexual innuendo. So what is going on? What is going on in the statement of Ruth saying, spread the wings of your garment around me? In the book of Ezekiel, in the Old Testament, God describes his covenant love and commitment for his people by telling them a story, a parable, if you will, of God coming along and rescuing a damsel in distress. It tells us in Ezekiel 16 this. This is God speaking. When I passed by you again, I saw you. Behold, you were at the age of love. And I spread the corner of my garment over you and covered your nakedness. I covered your shame. I covered your vulnerability. I made my vow to you and entered into a covenant with you, declares the Lord God, and you became mine. So what is Ruth doing when she's asking this question, spread your garment over me? She's asking him this, marry me. She's proposing, marry me and therefore redeem me. And think about this imagery. To spread the garment around her is essentially her saying, take all the good, all the bad, my past, my present, my pains, my liability, and even the death I now represent. Take it and absorb it. Make it your own. Take all of this upon yourself so that I may be restored and so that I may live. Let me find refuge in the shadow of your wings, my Redeemer, as the psalmist says. Remember, this is what the Redeemer did. The right of the Redeemer was the biblical principle of the kinsman, which would be the closest individual to a deceased husband. And that family member would step into a situation and absorb all of the liabilities, including marrying the deceased relative's widow. In other words, it was someone that was willingly stepping in to a situation that is marked by death and debt to restore life, to absorb the death and to return life and blessing. Does this sound familiar? Or like the Jesus alarms going off? It's because there is a Redeemer that has done the same for us. Amen? There's a Redeemer that has done the same for us. You see, as Boaz spread open his arms to cover Ruth, the shadow that he was casting in the moonlight was in the shape of a cross. Speaking of Jesus, in Isaiah 53, it tells us this: surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Think about the absorbing of our debt and death. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. With his wounds, we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have all turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. At the cross, Jesus opened his arms to spread the wings of his refuge over us. And he took upon himself our debt of sin, our death, our loss, our pain, our suffering, our sorrow, our spiritual homelessness, and our vulnerability. But he didn't just stop there. He didn't just absorb all of our liabilities and all of our debt and all of our death, but he returned to us blessing, joy, love, life, safety, and security for the future. Where do we see someone spreading their wings over us? In the person, the work of Jesus Christ, our refuge, our Redeemer. See, this is what the step of faith really looks like. It means coming to God and saying, all that I bring is brokenness and need. All that I bring is want. And all that I come with you right now is a request to receive. That's what faith does. Nothing in my hands I bring, simply to the cross I cling. I don't come with anything. In fact, what I come with is liability. Will you receive me as your own? Will you spread your garment of committed love over me and take me in? You see, although there is vulnerability and risk involved in following Jesus, and the truth is, Jesus may actually ask you to lay down your life for him. There is vulnerability and risk involved in following Jesus. But the big questions that Ruth carried that night as she approached the threshing floor, those big questions have been settled for us. For instance, the question of, will he receive me? Will he receive me? Jesus says in John chapter 6, all that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I will never cast out. Will he receive me? Through faith? Absolutely. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. All who come to me, I will never cast out. We don't come relying on our beauty. We don't come relying on our ability. We don't come relying on our strength or our goodness or even our morality. We don't approach Christ with fingers crossed as we have done ourselves up. We come by faith, relying upon the grace of our God. That is the approach. I've got nothing, but I'm staking it on your grace. Now, I know that that would probably be the best natural end of the sermon, and that's probably what you're thinking. But there's one more point. Boaz's resolve. What's the tension producing in Boaz? It's producing resolve. Picture the scene with me. Picture this conversation as Ruth has just proposed. Boaz tells her, you've been so kind to me, and you have not gone after any other men. So picture it. Ruth smiles. Fear not, All that you've asked, I will do for you. And so she begins to lean in. It's true, I am your redeemer. Ruth is ecstatic at that moment. And then, but. I can just imagine Ruth saying, but? Like, but what? Have you seen this? Like, but what? He says, someone else is closer in relationship to your deceased husband. I would love to marry you, but there's an obstacle. There's an obstacle in the way. There's an obstacle in the way. And so it leaves this big question mark looming over the story. Chapter 3 doesn't allow us to conclude. Okay. Chapter 3 is like that season finale of your favorite show where it just leaves you on the cliffhanger and then you're like, I got to wait till October 27th to see what that is. Yes, you got to wait, but till next week. But as much as there's tension in the story now, and now there's a huge obstacle. This is a huge obstacle. There's a big question mark looming over this. I think this needs to be noted. Uncertainty doesn't have the last word. Even in the tension, uncertainty doesn't have the last word. So what does have the last word? Resolve. Fast forward with me to the ending scene where Ruth is explaining to Naomi what has happened. In the very last verse, Naomi says this. Wait, my daughter, until you learn how this matter turns out. For the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. Wait. He's going to see this through. So what does this tell us? This tells us that the Redeemer won't rest until he secures rest for the ones he loves. The Redeemer won't rest until he secures rest for the ones he loves. I'd like to call the worship team up a little bit early today. And as they're coming, I'd like us to really ponder through this. Maybe your future seems really uncertain right now. Maybe there are a lot of question marks looming over your story right now, looming over your life. Maybe your future looks bleak, or maybe you're even facing obstacles that seem insurmountable, absolutely out of reach, impossible. The question is, what is it producing right now? What is it producing? Will you grow restless or will you take refuge? Will you grow restless or will you take refuge? And the answer to that question is based on where your hope and your confidence lies. Is your hope and your confidence in your circumstances? Is your hope and your confidence in your abilities? Is your hope and your confidence in your prospects? Or is your hope and confidence in the Redeemer, who did not rest until he settled the matter of your eternity at the cross? And has not only promised to begin a good work in us, but he's promised to finish that good work. He's promised to see this thing through all the way to the end. At the end of the day, no matter what challenges or obstacles arise in your life, the resolve of your Redeemer always has the last word. Always. No matter what unresolved struggle that you go to bed tonight thinking about, the grace, wisdom, and power of our Lord Jesus Christ always has the last word. And maybe you feel like your life right now is a chapter 3 kind of life. With just question marks, uncertainty, maybe even potentially bleak. But the truth is, to be a Christian means to live into that tension. In one regard, we are all living in the chapter 3. Jesus Christ, our Redeemer, he's come. He's lived the perfect life that we can't. He's died on the cross. He rose on the third day. He ascended to the right hand of the Father. And yet, we're waiting. We're waiting until he comes back. We're betrothed, engaged. We're waiting for the wedding day. We're waiting for the feast. What I want to do right now is I want to welcome us to spend a moment really bringing our restlessness before God, to really bring these things before God and believe upon his grace, forgiveness, and transformation. And so in this time, I want us to take a moment to do a few things. Let's tell our soul, you can do that. The psalmist does that. You're not crazy. Tell your soul, speak to your soul, go home. Go home, find rest in God. He's dealt bountifully with you. so in this time, I'd like to encourage you to tell God that you trust him. In this time, pray to God, say, you know what, God, I don't know what tomorrow holds. I don't, you do, I don't. But I know that you'll be there with me. I know that as I look forward and I don't see how this is going to resolve, I can look forward in hope and faith that you'll be there. And lastly, I want you to hear words spoken to your heart. As Naomi said those words, wait, my daughter. I want you to hear the voice of the Father speaking to you, his children, saying, wait, my daughter. Wait, my son. Because while you sleep tonight, Jesus will not slumber, and he will see this through. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Reality Stockton podcast. If you've been blessed by this ministry, please consider giving financially. For more info on how to give, please visit our website at realitystockton.com.